G'day guys, Sean here from the Car Expert Podcast. As we alluded to on Monday, we've got a special episode for you today. Tony and Al Bors, two of the founders here from Car Expert, recently sat down with Chris Harris and Edward Lovett from Collecting Cars. If you haven't heard of Collecting Cars, they're sort of similar to Car Expert, except they do kind of cool older cars. They recently expanded the business to Australia, and they came down here and had a chat to the guys, tell us everything about their business, talk about some of their favourite hot hatches that you can buy at the moment, and Chris dives into what he loves about Aussie motoring culture. It's a great chat, goes for about 45 minutes, so grab yourself a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, have a sit down and enjoy everything the guys have to say.
Well, we got Chris Harris, Edward Lovett here from Collecting Cars, Al Bors and myself here from Car Expert. We're both disruptors in these industries. What I want to know from you guys is, how do you deal with failure? And when is it time to move on and try something else, try another idea?
I've been telling these boys for the last 3 days that you're not allowed to be glass half empty. We've got to be glass half full. For me personally, we are not failing. And so I think we are still committed to what we're trying to deliver. I think we're making mistakes constantly and learning from those mistakes. Yeah. But I think, you know, failure is throwing the towel in. And that's not something I like to do. And, you know, clearly we have a product that works. We're 5 years into our journey and we've still got a huge amount more to achieve. So, we're learning fast.
What do you say to that? I mean, we've had tons of little
failures.
We're
the masters of failing, to be honest. Yeah. But you're right. If you keep going, you'll always eventually succeed.
Yeah.
What I love to know, though, is, like, you know, you've been going for 5 years. Walk us through the concept of when it started. Like, at some point you would have went, someone can do this better.
Yeah.
That's going to be me. How did that come about?
So, you know, I guess we're still learning. And since we started in May 2019, I think 44 competitors globally have started and closed in doing almost the identical business model. You know, we're very transparent, as you guys well know. It's free to sell with us. We charge 6% with a capped fee. You can go onto our terms and conditions. You can see how our auctions run. So, as a business model, it's pretty easy to copy. The execution is the key. And, you know, I'm a car dealer, born and bred. You know, we obviously brought Chris in from the start as a sort of strategic way of gaining eyeballs as quickly
catering.
As possible. Catering. So, yeah, Chris came in as the catering department. But, you know, we've got 92 of us, and we work relentlessly 24/7 to make sure we sell cars. And I think we probably make it look easier than it is. We're an elegant swan floating across the surface with our feet kicking.
It's interesting below. You say you're a car dealer born and bred, because most car dealers don't really embrace the internet as well as you guys have had. So how did that go about you? You obviously had a digital background, or you just got some really good people?
Yeah, no digital background. I went to East London in November of 2018 and paid an agency to build us a website using an auction plugin. I think it was WordPress. I paid about £80,000 or £90,000, and they built us what looks similar to the product today, but we're on our 10th iteration. It's all our own technology now, but, you know, we wanted to get into the market and learn. I think that's the key thing, isn't it? You've got to get in and start to learn what the customer needs. You know, we could have spent 2 years building what we perceived that our customers wanted, but we would have found out actually that's not what they wanted at all. So, you know, we got a product into the market very quickly. We're eager to hear from our buyers and sellers to know how we could adapt. And on a daily basis, we are adapting, both from a sales point of view, technology point of view, media point of view.
And what's been the most challenging thing you've had to do to get that business off the ground?
Staff.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. I feel you there.
Yeah.
Feel you there. Tell me, why did you guys move into the Australian market?
A little bit of organic, clearly UK right-hand drive market. So we saw very early on that we were attracting bidders from Australia, and then we started to have a few inquiries from Australia. We have a mutual friend that had someone down here that was prepared to work with us. And geographically, you know, we need to be able to cater for certain markets. So it's impossible for the UK to cater properly for the Australian market unless we're physically here. Yeah. So obviously being here means we can deal with the whole of Asia Pacific by having a team dedicated in the office here in Sydney.
Mm. How important is that passion you have for cars in a business like yours?
Well, it's interesting watching Edward. from a distance, because the first few years I was remote, I still had a job on the telly box, but I was fully committed to collecting cars. It was a complicated relationship. But the two things that the team seem to be passionate about is selling. It's the key thing. It's a sales job. You know, that's the hustle. We call it the hustle. But there's a love for cars. They do love cars. You go into the office, they're talking cars. They're going around each other's screens going, oh, have you seen that? Look at the individual spec on that. Love, you know, they talk the way we do. Yeah. We often say, and I absolutely believe this, if you're not authentic, you'll get found out really quickly. You know, and we talk about failure. You know, you're talking to the bloke who took on Top Gear after Jeremy Clarkson with Chris Evans is the most public failure in British broadcasting history. Yeah. And the failure came about because that bloke wasn't authentic. You know, he wasn't, you know, he's a great broadcaster. He's a collector of cars, excuse the pun with our brand name, but he's not a car enthusiast. So, yeah, I think the car is at the heart of it all. It really is. And it's very difficult to have a conversation with a prospective seller if you can't tease out the passion they have for their car. Yeah. You know, it's very rare that we can sign something where the owner just goes, yeah, it's just four wheels, I don't care about it. You know, they have an emotional bond with that vehicle. Yeah. We have to be into it. Yeah. So, everyone, the office is a really cool place. That's what I love about it, because there's a real passion for the product and for the cars.
I think that there's always an element of luck when you're starting a business with timing and team. And I started with two other people in the operational team plus Chris. And, you know, if I hadn't had those two people in the office and Chris, there's no way we would be where we are today. And, you know, when we started, we knew what the opportunity looked like, but we didn't go and raise any money. You know, we all did everything 24 hours a day and have built the team up from there. And I think the barrier to entry into this space now is very, very difficult. You know, we've got 250,000 active registered bidders from over 100 countries. You know, if you want to go and acquire that today, that's going to take you a long time and an awful lot of money before you even know if you've got traction, a good brand, and understanding how to operate the business. So we were lucky 5 years ago because we got on with it very, very quickly. And when I called Chris, you know, we tell the story, he was on the way to Edgbaston cricket. And
we won that.
And I said to him, look, this is what I'm going to do. And, you know, let's do a podcast. We need to create awareness very, very quickly. And that's not something we were going to go and do via Meta, etc. You know, we had to do it in an authentic manner.
Well, before you say something, I'll add this. For me, it was so gratifying because we're all not the youngest around these tables, right? And I think we view that influencer, Instagram, that social media sphere with great suspicion, because it's an area where you give away what you do for free. You could, and the only way you gratify yourself is you look at this number growing, but that number is meaningless. You know, if you've got one follower on Instagram or a million followers, if you're not earning money from it, doesn't feed your children, doesn't buy you dinners, it's a really weird thing. And yet we became obsessed with this number. Well, I hung around for ages to think, what do I do? How do I weaponize this number? I've got this big social following, but I've never done anything with it. And finally, I'm so glad. I mean, I'm a complete idiot in most things, but I waited and waited and waited. I didn't give it away. And then this idea came along, and suddenly you can start, I don't know how many followers I had then, 700, whatever, 1,000. You can just go, right, we've got this idea. And you hit 700,000 people, excuse me, for free with your idea. What's the advertising cost of that?
Yeah.
You know, that's prohibitive to any new business.
And so 30 years of work.
So we could just go, bang, in you go, we've arrived. And we were so efficient, as Edward said. You know, there's never been any wastage at collecting cars. No great big rounds of funding or anything like that. Just get on with it, do your best, don't pay yourself too much money, don't be too flash. It's sort of old school way of running a new tech business. I love that as well.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the social aspect of it, because I feel like there's been a whole generation of people that could potentially have become proper entrepreneurs that have just instead wasted all their time getting a following on socials, which has no real value or purpose to them long term, unless they do something else with it, like you have, right? But they haven't. Most of them haven't. And I remember being at the A45 launch when you were there, and I think you were on Instagram, said this car is made for influencers. You remember that? I think it upset a few people at Mercedes, but you were right. And a lot of the things that they developed at that launch was just for people to come and do a couple of reels and get the views, and that was the end of the story. And had no
AMG
purpose.
AMG has done this slowly over the last 5 years.
We do compliment quite a few of the influencers out there in terms of their relentless pursuit of putting out content, and they seem to be able to commercialize it for themselves. running a business is a very different thing. We were talking about it at breakfast. You know, it's really, really hard running a business.
I know.
How long did it take you to come up with that name? And because names are hard.
I was in Birmingham having a strategy meeting with a couple of initial people I was talking to work with and investors, that one of them was a technologist. And we were flicking through numerous names. And this was a really interesting, and this kind of shows you the level of confidence we had. This website came up and it was £7,000. Bear in mind, when most of us start businesses, I find it's getting a bit more challenging now, but you're looking at domain names on GoDaddy or whatever you guys use in Australia, and it's 99 cents or, you know, a dollar or whatever. You know, this was £7,500, and I just went click, buy. And I did it there and then. And subsequently, we've recently bought collecting.com, which we paid a significant amount of money for. But again, bang. You know, we just bought it with the confidence that that was the right name.
Pretty much
That's exactly the same thing we did with CarExpert. Yeah. It was $7,500 Australian.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just knew it was the right name.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, sometimes you're lucky, yeah. and it comes together, yeah. And you know, branding, again, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you know, that name and branding is such an important thing. Yeah, yeah. And we, you know, we're referred to as CC and collecting cars. You know, it really resonates with our audience now.
I just want to go back to that influencer thing. You said you praise some influencers, but and I get it when it comes to beauty products and health tips and all that sort of shit, but how does it really work if someone's going to drop 200K on whatever, be it a Porsche, McLaren? Is anyone listening to the influencer
I think
when they're talking about a McLaren?
I read your question coming upstairs, and as Chris said, authenticity is the most important thing. And if there's anything I believe personally that the influencer community has got wrong, is they feel the need they have to come across as the consumer and the owner. And in most of the cars that we all, that get us excited, that get us out of bed, that motivate us, I want to own one of those one day, GT3 RS, you know, an 812 Competizione, you know, our audience kind of want to own those cars. And to know we can't get one from our Porsche dealer or Ferrari dealer, but yet these influencers go and unveil them, and that I have a real problem with. And I don't think we show that. You know, Chris has got a GT3 Touring, which he's done 60,000 miles in. You know, this is not a car that he's been fortunate enough to be allocated so he can flip it for a profit. You know, that's...
Wish I had.
Yeah. No, I do believe Chris brings a level of authenticity to him, which wouldn't work if we had gone a different route with a different face.
The influencer thing, I could go on for a long time, and I have done in the past, and I don't want to come across an old bastard. My key frustrations are, I see a lot of very talented people that have got lost in the narcissism of social media. It's really sad. These people that if they'd listened to older, more experienced people, might have gone on and done better things and more things with their talents.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the whole point of my social media following was to build a brand. You know, it's this brand worked independently of Edward Lovett, Chris Harris, Rohan Gupta, Ollie Johnstone, and people that the absolute core team. Whereas if you're an influencer, it's your name. You're not scaling anything. You're scaling your own misery, if you ask me. When it comes to reviewing cars, I think initially there was a sense that, you know, the real consumer of the 812 GTS that buys it and lives with it and what have you, that's a real thing, and I can get that. But the car maker's got to be very careful with this, because the moment any car brand goes into a phase of only allowing its customers to review its cars, we know it goes wrong. Yeah. You know, we've seen it before.
Yeah.
So
I was quite surprised with just before, and I'm not going to name any names, but we were talking about a particular brand in the UK with a big media following, and clearly that's been hugely successful. But I'm really surprised the move of the face of that business that has made this year taking delivery of a new car. It feels pretty distasteful to me.
Right.
Because you know, these are cars that people, you know, the consumers, they really want to buy and they can't buy. They go into a Porsche center and they're like, sorry, we can't get you one of those. Yet, you know, the guy that we all watch on YouTube is getting one and sort of almost rubbing it in everyone's face. And I think, yeah, you've got to be really careful with that.
Yeah. Back to more enjoyable stuff. What is your, and you, Ed, most enjoyable drive ever? And as I said in my question, it could have been a Hillman Imp out cornering a V8 muscle car,
Does this matter if it's a car or a road or a journey?
Anything. Anything at all. What's the most enjoyable
I'll
drive
answer that
ever?
First to give Chris a second to think about it. So I've got three children. So I used to do a lot of road tours around Europe. I used to arrange them with my family business, and I joined a few others. And it seems like a long time ago now. But recently I'd hopped in the car on a Friday afternoon, and I drove from London to Burgundy. And we went down a road called the D996. And it felt like the first time in a long time that my phone was nowhere to be seen. And I just engaged with this road in a Porsche 911. And it was the first time I felt utter freedom for probably 10 years. And to me, that's special, you know, to be by yourself in a car, in the moment, is that for me.
So rare these
days. Wonderful. Chris?
Too many. The drive from the Nürburgring, or rather from the sort of where you come off at Prüm down to the Nürburgring from the UK, is special. And it's a road that has rhythm and flows, and it's fast. You can drive it fast. So that's probably the best driving road. If you know, pin your ears back and drive perhaps like you shouldn't do, that's where I'd go. But the notion of journey means that I'm more excited about the next journey, the one I haven't had. You know, where are we going to go next? How are we going to enjoy what we've got left for cars? And if I'm being utterly soppy, I've got children as well. I love wobbling along in a not very fast car, listening to comedy, laughing, being stupid, putting all four windows up and doing terrible wind and stuff like that, and just, you know, just being an idiot dad.
I think we can all get that.
Being an idiot dad with your kids in the car is a thing of joy. And it's why, actually, I'm not interested in two-seaters anymore. As you get older, you think, I want to share this fun with my kids. I'd rather have a faster state car than I would a two-seater. You can cut that bit out about the farts, or I'll get in trouble with my daughter.
That's a good segue into the most embarrassing moment you've ever had in a car. Whether you've shat in the car or... which I have done, unfortunately. But I do tell that story as an MX-5, and my bottom never hit the seat.
Oh, dear.
Because I kept it up.
What is it with you Aussies and swearing? It's such high quality always.
My most embarrassing moment, I think, was my family have a car business in the West Country in the UK. Chris tells me they're MOT centres, but
They're quite big players.
They sell cars, and I left the office one day in a Ferrari 458, brand new demonstrator. And the Ferrari dealership is at one end of the road, and the Porsche dealership is at the other end of the road. And a friend of mine was in the car, so I thought I'd be really impressive and turn that little Manettino switch to off. And I came out of the exit and went straight into the bus stop as all of the staff were leaving the Porsche centre. That was probably my most embarrassing moment.
Good to be honest.
Oh, I've got too many. I'll tell
you. Give us one.
How about Maserati 3200 GT, the turbocharged twin turbo V6 one with the boomerang lights.
Yeah.
And I've got a work experience kid in it. And I'm like, here we go. I'm the big daddy. I don't think there was any traction control on it at all. We're up near the M1, near Millbrook, the test venue in the UK, slightly damp road, and I was going to do a big send out of a T-junction and like this. And I sent it, and it went too far. It blocked the oncoming traffic and just stalled. Couldn't get it started again. And it was bright yellow.
Oh,
and this truckie just got out, knocked on the window, and just went... and then he's got, so and got back in his cab, and I was like, that's not fair enough, really.
So good.
No aggression, just like...
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. And look, I do have two anonymous questions from a UK source. Did you ever put an Aston into a ditch while doing cornering shots?
Well, I know this is obviously someone that worked with me at some point because I found the photo last night. So here you go. This is it. I'd forgotten about this. So there it is. Get your camera on that. See that?
You got to that very quickly.
If you look, because I found it last night on my phone. Right, so that's a DBS. That's a rock face. That's a bit, that bodywork there is altered, but you can see it's gone in backwards. So I can't remember exactly what happened, but it would always have been just one more. So you've got a photographer saying, just one more.
Oh, yes.
And then the absolute scroat that worked for The Sun, who I won't even mention his name because he's no life. He then tried to get hold of the picture to run it in The Sun as road test bloke, writes off DBS. I didn't nearly write it off at all. But I did, that contributed to my ban from Aston Martin for several years. Because I did that, and on the launch...
Who was in the chair there at Aston?
Dr. Betts. Who was, by then, he'd gone beyond being awkward. He was a fantasist by then. You know, he'd just wake up and just stroke
and
off.
And put his race suit on, right?
He was just a madman. So so we got there, and he'd just launched the emotional control unit. Remember that thing that you plunged in? I mean, it was like Oedipal,
glass,
you know. You wake up and just finger your own dashboard. Right, Betts, get back in your box, mate. So I wrote this column in Autocar. That this guy had basically decided to just walk around just, you know, just sticking fingers in things, and he didn't like that. And the next week, I wrote a story about, this is shameful, about the DBS, that I'd gone on the launch, because he was so prominent in the whole event. It was about him. He had an audience with him, they had an interview with him. After about 2 hours, you actually got like 10 minutes driving the car, during which I nearly clipped a rock face. So I wrote the launch, I went on the launch of the Dr. Betts, and at the end of it, they let me drive this car called a DBS, and he went mad. And I was not allowed to drive a car, I think, for 5 years after that. But I did do that.
And the other one, did you forget where you'd parked a 996 in Madrid, having been out on the lash the night before?
Is any one man that would know that? Is any one man that would know that? So I'm going to have to have words with him. Yes, I was charged with parking a 996 press car on the way back from the E46 M3 launch down in like Estoril or Cadiz, right down the bottom there. Yeah. And I think we went out for a couple of beers and we'd sort of left, it was dark. I left it. I was charged with leaving it on this street. I thought, it'll be okay. Then we went out and had some more beers. I thought, I can't leave it. Seems all right. Let's go have some more beers. And that went on till the small hours. And I woke up next morning, my colleague said, just go and check on the car. And it was in the middle of sick lanes of traffic. And they were just lifting it up on this transporter. I had to beg to get it off. It wasn't good. And then someone got a photo of it, sent it back to Porsche. We were terribly behaved, but you could. You were allowed to. They don't do that now. Yeah. But I didn't drive it drunk. I didn't even get in it. I thought it's far better to have it stolen by the Spanish police.
Wonderful. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
A few people have asked me this, and I wanted to ask you. Where are you from originally?
Oh, yeah. So someone said you might be Iranian.
Yeah.
I'm a mongrel, and no one really knows.
Right.
But it's the gap between the eyebrow and the hair there that gives it away.
We have
a minimal gap, people from that part of the world. But I'm told that my father was Persian, I think.
Yeah, right.
But okay. I'm a lost and found.
You're born in the UK, though?
Yes, we're pretty sure I was born in the UK.
right.
But
right.
I'm one of the lucky ones.
So there's no Farsi coming out of your mouth
No,
today.
There's nothing. No. I don't have any of it. I've never been there. Right. At the moment, it looks like I won't be going
there.
I haven't gone there for a long time.
You
know, but I'm fascinated by it. I'd love to. It's, you know, it's a country whose culture dominated this globe for many, many years.
Yeah.
And I should be proud of that, but I don't really have any connection to it. But no, you're right. I think there's a bit of French in there. People always ask me. I'm one of those people that I'm a chameleon. I can be exactly what you don't want to be in any country.
Yeah.
So
right.
I'm very
Australian at the airport when I go to the US. I can.
Yeah,
tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I can imagine. But if I'm in California, I look like a Mexican. Not helpful. I was once walking around one of those old military markets in Moscow years ago. You know, we can buy like cosmonaut suits and masks and stuff. They just sell it all in this market. I'm walking on, this bloke hooks me up in the arm, just takes me away. It's a policeman. Luckily I had a Russian friend. About an hour later, I'm being questioned in this police office by Russian people. I've no idea what they're saying. Mate comes in and goes, don't worry about it, they thought you were Chechen. So what's that all about? So when I'm in France, I look Spanish. When I'm in Spain, I look Greek. You know, I'm always the wrong one.
Yeah, fair enough.
But normally, as I said to Edward, I go away and I cry into my GT3.
Well, I can tell you, the first few years of doing trips and launches, he was pulled at every single to check for bombs and all
fine.
The rest
I just
of
go
it.
To
yeah,
them. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I remember a really funny story where we were down south of Australia. We were in a Vantage. Some guy rolled. We were filling up. Some guy rolled into the petrol station, nearly cut off the front end of the Vantage. He walks into the sees him in the petrol station, walks in and says, if you do that again, I'll put a bomb in your car. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not sure if that was good to share publicly, but I'm sure he's never done that again.
I've got a hat that the guys at Manti very kindly left in my car when they did some work on it a couple of years ago. And it just says, it's the Grello car. You know what Grello is?
Yeah, Grello
is the lovely yellow and green 911s that tend to win that 24-hour race. And the hat is black and it's got 911 written on the front of it. And I was recently in a cafe in the UK looking like I do with 911 on it. And this bloke went, not serving you, mate. And I went, I was like, it's a car. No, it's not a good look with you like that, mate. What, I don't know what you're supporting. It's a Fissa Porsche. Genuinely, he was like, wasn't happy with me having 911 on my hat. Yeah. So, yeah, there are complications. It's just occupational hazard, really, isn't it?
Speaking of cheaper, you know, non-two-seaters, what's the least expensive car you've had the most fun in?
We were talking about our first cars last night, weren't we? My first car was a Nissan Sunny 1.4 LX, and I perfected the handbrake turn on that car into my parents' house. And I think your first car, that freedom, it's hard to think of anything more fun than that first time with Chris's son passed his driving test yesterday.
Last night my son passed his driving test.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's...
Manual?
Yeah, manual. That's one of those ones where you get choked up because you remember what it was like. So it has to be that first drive, doesn't it? On your own.
Yeah.
When you're flying solo.
Freedom, yeah.
It is, and their generation doesn't care anything like as much as we do. You know, my boys, he's glad to pass his test, but he's waited till he's nearly 19, you know. For me, it had to be done straight away. And I always had this romanticised notion that Australians got straight into a big old Holden and away you went. What was the reality?
Big old Valiant VIP.
Was it?
Yeah.
Maybe in the 60s when he was young, yeah.
What did you have?
I had a Ford Falcon, to
did
be honest.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, I got the story of that. When I did the deal to get part of Car Advice, our original
terrible
company,
deal for me, I got to say.
I said, "Where's your car?" Oh, he came with some other guy, and I said, "Who's this guy?" And he said, "Oh, well, he's." I found out later he had a purple Falcon that he didn't want me to see to do the deal.
I was too embarrassed. I used to park it like a kilometre away from any of the clubs, so the girls never see me get out of it. Yeah.
When we were growing up, getting insurance on a car was very, very difficult. I'm not saying it's much easier today, so we had to have super cheap cars. You know, that's really all you could justify getting insured on. Now you end up putting the children on family policies and things like that. So we probably want them to be in something a bit safer with an airbag. But you know, we had none of that when we were kids.
To answer that seriously, it comes back to that notion of authenticity for me. You should, as a true car lover, you should be able to find joy in anything mechanical, operating any machinery. And if you don't, then you're not part of my club.
Yeah.
You know, I used to love, and I still love, mowing the lawn. Give me a lawn tractor. Yeah. And I'll see how fast I can get up to that tree trunk and not just snag. I don't want to pinch any bark off the bottom. I want to see how close I get the cutting deck to it. If it's a hire car, I want to, you know, I'll find myself sitting there, midday, and I've got a Corsa 1.2, like I've got a shit box outside. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't mind going down the road in that. You know, I have to go for a little drive. I think if you're addicted to driving, our podcast is called Collecting Addicts, free plug. It's because we're addicted to the process of buying cars and driving cars. And it's a meritocracy. But I will say consistently, it's easier to find joy in cheaper machinery than really expensive machinery. Because there's a gay abandon. It's not disposable, but you're like, I could really stick this on the door handles. The great shame of meeting your heroes, and I'm so lucky, and Edward has driven many amazing cars, but if someone goes, here's my whatever, and it's worth 20 million quid, I defy you not to always have that voice in the back of your head saying, if you snag second gear synchro, you're selling your house.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make it more pleasurable.
If King Charles decreed every UK household had to have an EV registered, what would it be, both of you?
I've got to give a stupid answer for this. Rimac.
Rimac. Yeah, Rimac. Okay. No realistic one.
In London, our family city car is a BMW i3, which
one of the greatest.
I would have that car if it was just a petrol engine because I love the way it works. For a family, you can get four adults in it. It's a brilliant EV. If that's what EV cars are, then I'm all for them. I think what we're struggling with in the UK is nobody's getting real world range out of these cars that what were being sold by the manufacturers.
Well, not in your weather anyway, you know.
Well, not with our weather, but the charging infrastructure's useless, so you might as well be stupid and either have something very practical in the city like an i3 or something that you don't need to worry about charging all the time like a Rimac.
Serious answer, the only electric car you can really buy in the UK is a Tesla Model 3. It's not the best car, but it's the best network, and it's the network that supports your motoring. So yeah. The dynamics of the car and everything else, whatever, the network works, the others don't. So, that's the only way I could do it. But my serious answer is I'd buy a Bentley Mulsanne, and I'd put enough batteries in the back of it. I'd make a fake electric system in the boot, take it to an MOT centre, say, look, this can drive 2 miles an hour, and I'd never use the electricity. I'd just use it as a 6.75-litre twin-turbo V8 with a massive load of cow inside it. I'm struggling with EVs at the moment. I think there's amazing engineering going on, but we are certainly in the UK in the era of the chocolate fire guard. You know, these things are... They don't work as cars for us.
I think the other thing is, you know, like pretty much every government, you know, they've been supporting manufacturers to sell these cars, and you know that support's starting to go away now. And the electric cars have got more and more expensive. You know, a Taycan for £175,000, or a what's the car we drove in Canada? A Lucid Air,
you know. That's the best car I've been in.
But you know, so that's a $250,000 car. We're seeing in the UK, Porsche Taycans, the depreciation is just, it's in freefall.
So they launched them. They launched the Macan as an EV last week, wasn't it? Early this week.
£80,000.
A vehicle that's been a huge success for them as a ICE. Yeah. I mean, who's going to buy it? I hate to say it. So I sent a note to Porsche saying, right, okay, all well and good. At the moment, as I write this, there are 712 Taycans for sale on Autotrader in the UK. 712. That's not counting all the stock that Porsche hasn't sold. So let's roughly double that number. Who's going to spend £80,000-£90,000, whatever that is in Aussie, and with your taxes as well? It's a $200,000 car minimum, isn't it?
Yeah. Minimum Taycan spend year is 165 plus on roads.
For a new car. Yeah, yeah.
But what about the EV version? It's going to be more, isn't it?
The Macan will be at least, high ones, early twos. Yeah. Yeah. Are you scared of the 911 becoming an all EV product?
No, I'm not at all, because it's the way the world's going. And I fear they might all regret it at some point. But they're.
Yeah.
Do you know what? We live in a world of engineers, and engineers are really clever. They've got big foreheads, and they'll solve it. They'll find a way.
Yeah.
And also, there's always a pocket of engineers in a car company that are enthusiasts.
And they're car nuts.
And we all know that when a car company is singing, those engineers have their voices heard. When a car company is a bit crushed, they're the ones that are being silenced. And I think at the moment, they've all been silenced for a long time because they've been pushed into a corner by legislation, by politics. But I think they'll start to flourish a bit more soon. I think good times will come again. A hybrid 911, meaningless to me, 1800 kilogram 911. But actually, look how many 992s, 991s. Don't buy a new car. For me, the whole thing is, if you want to be an enthusiast at the moment, there's a whole playbook of the last 20 years of great cars that are usable, reliable, great fun. I've got a 991.2 GT3, as the enthusiasts call it. I see no need in buying a new car. This car will do 250,000 miles easily on its engine. It's great fun to drive. I think it's pretty. It's not too big. The new one is called an ST. It's got 20 horsepower more. Well, I hate to say it, there's no incentive for me to go and buy a new car at the moment. I think, if we're going to be green, or whatever, you know, I've got my Steve Irwins on. If we're going to be green, then the greenest thing you can do is buy a used car, isn't it?
One that's already been built.
It's got life in it.
You got £20,000, and for all those people listening in the UK, what are you going to buy for £20,000 used?
Well, I've just bought it, so you carry on first.
I think I prefer. Well, come back to me. I need to think.
I've just bought something for a bit more. It's about twice. I think I paid 25.
Yeah.
But it's an E61 M5. So I bought an M5 Touring with the V10 in it.
Wow.
Because that is. That's the best way to celebrate the end of this era for me. A normal
we
series car.
We never got that here, do we? We only got the sedan.
So I would buy the sedan because that would come in at 20 grand. Right. You've got a normally aspirated V10 that they should never have been allowed to make because it's absolute madness on the road. Yeah. And it had all sorts of reliability issues. But as ever, clever people with big foreheads have worked it out. So you can, as long as you change those rod bearings, mine's done 129,000 miles. It's sweet as a nut. Yeah. It sounds like a sort of deranged Audi Quattro. And it is so fast and it just looks like a taxi. It's a great car. So yeah, for me, V10 Gerhard Richter era M5. Remember the launch?
That's so cheap, £25,000.
Yeah, for the touring.
Incredible price.
Remember Gerhard Richter at the launch, and we said, why is there no manual gearbox? And he'd had about 8 beers and he went, because I didn't want to have one. No.
We're in the UK, and I know I think there's a company that do it in Australia, but there's a company in the UK called Rocketeer who've just started putting Jaguar V6 engines, crate V6 engines, into MX-5 Mazdas. And, you know, I've never desired an MX-5 in my life, but I went and drove this Rocketeer thing. It's brilliant. And I think it's about $7,000 to put the engine in it. So you can go and buy a $5,000 MX-5, stick one of those in it, and I think you'll have a lot of fun.
Awesome.
But those questions, it's interesting. Quite often I go for a new car phase. You know, we're all faddish, aren't we? I'm not interested in new cars at the moment. I'm just not. I'm interested. Yeah. Those are the questions I want to answer. I want to engage with. When I'm in the car on my own, I think about those things. I don't think about, what leather should I have on my new Ferrari 296? I just couldn't care.
Can I ask you what your favourite hot hatch is at the moment?
The latest Civic Type R by a mile. Have you driven it? It was the FL.
Fucking phenomenal.
What is that all about? It's
beyond. I waxed lyrical about him. He doesn't get it, but
it just looks, it's a bit over the top.
I love it. Everything about that car. That is the precision of every single mechanical component.
To make a turbocharged front-wheel drive car feel that connected on the road, because that's the worst recipe, isn't it? You've potentially got a laggy engine, and you're steering with the driven wheels. That should be a recipe for disaster, and yet they're geniuses. I agree.
I want to ask you one question to sort of end this off, because you talk a lot about not being interested in new cars. So going to like the main sort of exotic brands, what is your like favorite car of that era that's now finished? Because as we know, they're all gone, right? All the good cars from that perspective that you're talking about are all finished. Like going through Aston, McLaren, Ferrari, Lamborghini, what would you have that isn't like one of those crazy one-off stuff?
I've kind of got it. That GT3.
Oh, that's Porsche.
So Aston Martin would be, it's an interesting one that. I think the original 6-speed V12 Vantage is a really special car now. The 7-speed one they did later didn't work quite so well. Lamborghini have been consistently rubbish for me for a long time, but that STO came out of nowhere. Really special machine. Ferrari, interesting. Ferrari still making some great cars. The SF90 is a bit of a sort of anomaly. I don't really understand that, but you drive a 296.
Brilliant.
That's a spectacularly capable car. If I had the money for a new car, that's where it would go in that genre. Beyond that, the really toppy stuff, I don't really get. Because then I put my racing helmet on. I say, if you're going to spend that money, let's go racing. Anything that's a sort of track only road car for me is very strange, because I drive them, I've done films of them for TV, for the internet, and I come away thinking it's great. But if you'd just given me a GT3 car, it'd have been 4 seconds a lap quicker, it would have been reliable. Just get a race car.
I think that some of the supercars, they've clearly got so fast now, and there's all this sort of one-up machine. You know, 458 Italia felt like peak V8 Ferrari to me. That the steering, the performance was brilliant. And then the 488 all of a sudden had a far faster steering rack, and it was a very different car.
Yeah. What's the most spectacular car ever been sold on Collecting Cars?
So, given the fact we're here,
coming up even.
Given the fact we're here, we sold a Ferrari F50 in November for £50 short of £3 million. And it was paid for within 24 hours, and it arrived 3 days ago here in Sydney.
That's the biggest sale you've had?
It is the biggest sale, but the fact we sold it to Australia is kind of cool. So it arrived here on a plane in Sydney,
and,
we're going to meet the owner in 30 minutes.
Capped fee, right? Doesn't matter.
Correct. So the buyer paid £6,000.
That's a good deal for the buyer.
Yeah, great deal for the buyer. Great deal for the seller as well.
Yeah. What do you think about Hyundai? And the way Albert Bierman has managed to engineer their hot hatches and their...
Well, William Thomas is a good friend of mine and someone that I used to work with in the UK, Bill, yeah. who runs all the comms over there, so I've got to be careful. I'm joking. They've done an incredible job, haven't they?
Yeah.
They really have.
Yeah.
They
almost out of nowhere, too, which I've found...
And I'm old enough to know that, you know, foolishly... I know, on reflection, we laughed at them. We laughed at Kia, we laughed at Hyundai. Yeah. They would joke, they would joke. Do you remember when Car Magazine did that stand first? You know the old Lorem Ipsum days when you'd put a fake headline in or stand first into a story and wait for someone to put it in? Someone at Car Magazine wrote, "Her name is Rio and she's shit." And because no one even bothered to look at the copy, it went, was it, she's crap? It was published. Yeah. Yeah. It was published and it wasn't meant to be because someone thought it would be a hilarious reference to Duran Duran. Of course, it was inadvertently, all these things, it just explained what we all thought. Yeah. But they've come out of nowhere. Beerman's done a fantastic job. The cars are sensational. That little i20M, have you driven one of those?
Yeah. I was just talking about buying one, yeah.
Little car, that is.
And cheap.
And cheap. And these, you know, 7-year warranties. They have mugged... What they've done is they've mugged the Germans, certainly in the UK and in a lot of Europe, because they've come out with high quality. And the one thing that the German brands could do is rely on the sort of snob value.
Yeah.
But the EV thing has exploded snob value. Yeah. Families now just go, I don't give a shit if it says Hyundai on it. It looks cool. Yeah. I'll have that over a Merc, thanks. Yeah. And all the Germans thought they could rely on the fact that people would keep coming back to them because they had this perceived brand value, but it doesn't seem to count for much. It's like a total wiping the slate clean on brand value.
I mean, they're all buying their batteries from China. Like, at the end of the day, like, a badge is a badge, but so far as the internal components go, if you're getting the same stuff on a Hyundai,
there's real bravery with Hyundai. Like, the IONIQ 5 is just a, you know, it was drawn by a 17-year-old that liked Star Wars, and they went, well, go on, make it. Why not?
Even their van, even the iLoad and the Staria, like the Staria with those front lights. When I first saw that, I thought, that can't be a real photo.
I thought it was a mole. Yeah. It's a car with no eyes. But you know, but actually...
It looks cool on the road.
It does. It's all about bravery.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think they've done an amazing job. And actually, I like the fact that they still want to engage with ICEs. They want to make fast cars.
Yeah.
They want to encourage young people to quite like driving.
Yeah, and we spoke to them, I think, at one of the launches in Korea, and the guy running it now, after Bierman had exited, I've forgotten his name, Teagarten, but he said that they want to keep making ICE hot hatches for that very reason of being able to be affordable and not be priced out of, you know, a new car purchase, and obviously to keep people enthusiasts, to build the enthusiast market. As you said, it's to lose that enthusiastic spin in your company would be death.
Well, I think it's happened to many.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt, if we recorded one of these in 5 years' time, there'll be half the number of car makers, probably, I think.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming to Oz, mate.
Thank you very much. Here. Not my first time, but I do. We like it here.
Hopefully back for another cricket match.
Although, you watch football, right? We don't watch soccer, but you know, 4 days, obviously, 4 days ago I did turn the TV on and go, West Indies, really? Oh, it's interesting. That was a good match. Come on, boys. That was a good match.
Yeah.
No, Aussie car culture has always been something I just love. I loved Holden. I loved Ford. I loved V8s. I went to Bathurst 10 years ago to watch the big race.
Yeah.
And I, you know, just from everything from the... It had the highest quality racing, the highest quality bad behaviour. It had everything. It was, for me...
I think it's the only race in the world where you're only allowed a certain number of beer bottles to bring in. Yeah. No other part in the world has that sort of restriction, but people come and bury it in the sand. Heard,
yeah. Two cases only, yeah.
I mean, I don't even know how you go through that in 12 hours, but they do.
Are you guys going to come on Sunday?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
He'll be back in Brisbane, but that is one of the most underrated tracks of all time.
And once you get into that awful bloody vortex of watching one-off qualifying laps of Brocky back in the day, and you know, just firing this thing at walls,
frightening,
and the total lack of suspension control. Like, they're talking about, he's got this new setup. He's got no setup.
No.
He's just steering it with his gonads.
Yeah.
He's just hanging it
out.
And then Tom Walkinshaw in the V12 Jags. It's fantastic spectacle.
Yeah.
And the commentary, of course, you know, you're the greatest commentators in the world. Some of the words, it's just screaming, you know. I think there's motoring culture here. lampooning. I think it's fantastic. We walked in through the underground garage and there was a Maloo. I can't not take photographs of them.
We have a very strong police force in this.
I know. I got done last time I was here because I couldn't understand how they could get me coming towards me.
That's how they always get us here.
And I was like, I don't believe that technology at all. I just don't believe it can do it.
See, when we're in the UK, we think we've got freedom. We just...
They are hot on it here. And culturally, you know, if people are doing 72 and you go past 76, they're all like... Mm.
Yeah, everyone's a cop here.
So, no, a massive fan. And also, I wrote a book recently, and if anyone read it, I'm sorry if you did. Motoring journalism, as we know it in the UK, was dictated and shaped by Australians. It really was. You know, talent Fraser. That you guys have always shown... For you know, Fraser, Cropley, Robbins, and all these people that I just adored and still adore as writers. Yeah. They were the ones that shaped it all. So, you know, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for them. Because it was Car Magazine back in the day that I'd pick up as a kid and go, I want to be Gavin Green, I want to be Steve Cropley. And I love that. Because the turn of phrase, Motor. I always remember Motor Magazine when I was young, when the first bug-eyed Impreza came. You know, with the Impreza, they put those stupid big headlights on it. And everyone else was just... This summarised Australian culture and the semantics of Australia for me. Everyone else nerdled round the obvious. We all went, ooh, controversial looking. And then suddenly we saw the cover or the stand first in Motor went, what the f*** have they done to the wrecks? It's like, boom, you said it straight.
Yeah. All right, awesome.
Good stuff. Yeah, great, guys. Safe travels.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of your time here and we'll see you Sunday.
Yes, please. Yeah. What are you coming in?
Yeah, i5 M60.
Oh, I saw it in the car park.
Yeah.
So Harry Metcalf's gave that a good slating. What do you reckon to it?
It's a luxury car, can I say, yeah. It's just a luxury. I did phone the guy from BMW last night. It's luxury. I haven't pinned it yet, but I like the i4 M50. I don't know if you've driven that.
Yeah, that's good.
That's quite a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Different car to this, though.
Yeah.
Very different.
It's a luxury car.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Well, there you go. Pretty awesome things that they have to say, and their business sounds absolutely awesome. So if you're after a classic used car, maybe check out Collecting Cars because they have some pretty neat stuff on the website. Now, if you want to hear more interviews like this, you want to see more things like this, leave a comment and let us know. We're looking to change up the Car Expert podcast a little bit and try some different things this year. So if there's anyone you'd like us to talk to, anyone you'd like to hear from, leave a comment and let us know down below. Thank you so much for watching and we'll see you on Monday.